This episode is brought to you by Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto, which can help you lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks. Get started at factormeals.com/factor50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Weight loss with Factor Keto based on a randomized controlled clinical trial. Results will vary depending on diet and exercise.
I can say to my new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra, hey, find a keto-friendly restaurant nearby and text it to Beth and Steve. And it does, without me lifting a finger, so I can get in more squats anywhere I can. One, two, three.
Will that be cash or credit?
Credit. Four.
Galaxy S25 Ultra, the AI companion that does the heavy lifting so you can do you. Get yours at Samsung.com. Compatible with select apps requires Google Gemini account. Results may vary based on input. Check responses for accuracy.
We off?
30 seconds of carefree bliss.
Oof, like wind in your hair carefree.
Oh, like using Clorox disinfecting all-purpose cleaner in the home carefree.
Yes!
Like dog slobbing on the coffee table and cleaning it with Clorox carefree.
He's on a roll now.
Spit toothpaste on the faucet.
You got it. You got it.
Peanut butter on the light switch.
Oh, spritz, spritz.
Yeah, spritz, spritz. Clorox, man. Clean feels good.
Okay, we're back. Use as directed.
I'd been slumped in my squeaky office chair, counting the minutes until the midday heat lost its grip, when the radio crackled on the desk. One of our volunteers' voices trembled on the other end, asking for immediate backup. They'd spotted smoke rising from somewhere near the far boundary of our little desert park. Normally, suspicious plumes of smoke meant yet another junker set ablaze, something we saw often enough that it barely rattled me anymore. But the quiver in the volunteer's tone gnawed at me. Something about this situation felt off. Without waiting for protocol or double-checking any sign-out sheets, I grabbed my keys and waved my coworker, Manny, over. We piled into our dusty truck and took off down the barren road, nothing but a shimmer of heat on the horizon. My mind kept replaying worst-case scenarios. A wildfire blazing out of control, folks trapped in a gutted vehicle, or maybe something darker I couldn't fully process yet. The desert seemed too quiet as we sped toward the site. Normally I'd catch glimpses of desert hares scuttling across the road or a hawk circling overhead. Not this time. The entire place felt as if it was bracing for bad news. Manny fiddled with the radio, trying to reach the volunteers again, but all we got was static laced with muffled crackles. Each burst of static made me grip the steering wheel tighter. We rounded a bend and spotted thick smoke curling into the sky. That acrid scent of burned rubber and metal practically tore through the truck's ventilation. We pulled up, tires crunching on gravel, and the volunteers waved us over, their faces drained of color. I stepped out and got an immediate taste of heat so intense it felt like a furnace blast. The car in question was more of a scorched metal skeleton at this point, the flames mostly dying down but leaving behind angry black fumes. Manny and I exchanged uneasy glances. We'd dealt with torched vehicles before. Thieves often dumped them after stripping out valuable parts. But as we edged closer, something caught my eye through the shattered driver's side window. It looked like a large lump, leaning against the steering wheel. I tried convincing myself it was just a mass of melted upholstery. Stepping around for a clearer look, I discovered it was definitely not just a ruined seat. My stomach dropped. I found myself staring at the remains of a person, the body blackened and distorted, features impossible to make out. The door handle had melted in places, and the rope, yes, rope, had fused to the metal. This wasn't a simple joyride gone wrong. Someone had brought this car here, bound the person inside, and shot them before setting the entire thing aflame. The sight pressed down on me, suffocating, like the desert itself was turning hostile. Manny rushed back to the truck to call for proper backup. As we stood by, the smoke coiled in the sky, trailing a pungent odor that clung to my clothes. Time seemed to grind to a halt while we waited. One of the volunteers hovered near me, stammering about how they'd initially assumed the car was just another stolen husk until they peered into the driver's seat. I remember scanning the area, paranoid about a possible suspect lurking in the brush. maybe watching us from behind a tumbleweed. The fire department eventually roared in, dousing the smoldering wreck, sending up fresh plumes of steam. Then the police arrived, setting up a perimeter with that familiar yellow tape. I tried to focus on small details, like half-burned food wrappers on the ground and the bullet holes scarring the frame. How many shots were fired? Was the victim alive when they were bound? I hated how my own thoughts drifted into morbid territory, but I needed to gather facts if I ever wanted to sleep again. Hours slipped by as investigators combed through the ashes, taking pictures, bagging up scraps of rope. I noticed Manny in a corner, staring silently at the wreck. He'd told me once that he was used to gore from a past job, but even he looked shaken. What we found here wasn't just violence, it was cruelty. Eventually, the site was labeled secure, and the authorities sent us on our way. We left behind a few sheriff's deputies to maintain the perimeter until forensics could finish up. As Manny and I drove back, the sky had bled into a deep sun-scorched orange. My head swam with everything we'd witnessed. The volunteers, wide-eyed and jittery, followed in their own car, still reeling from the realization that the scene they'd stumbled upon was so much worse than they'd feared. By the time we reached the station, a rumor was already circulating about the haunted site. Word travels fast in small circles, and folks around here can't resist a good ghost story. I overheard someone joking about how it had probably become the park's most sought-after camping spot. Visitors love a grim legend. But there was nothing amusing in the images still stuck in my head. The scorched seat, the twisted rope, that unrecognizable form in the driver's seat. I tried distracting myself with trivial tasks, sorting gear, scribbling meaningless notes on my next shift's to-do list. Nothing helped. Deep down, I knew I wouldn't forget what I saw that day. The desert had always been harsh, but I'd never thought it could be so merciless. And we still had no clue who that poor person was or why they ended up on that lonely stretch of sand. That night, insomnia took hold. All I could do was stare at the ceiling, replaying the stench of scorched metal and flesh, the hush of onlookers too rattled to speak. My mind refused to drift anywhere else. Instead, it clung to the notion that something, or someone, was out there, ready to do it again if they felt like it. For the first time since I started this job, the wide-open desert didn't look like a place of freedom. It felt like a place you go to bury your secrets, the kind that should never see daylight. I was still reeling from the scorched car and the horrifying discoveries tied to it when we got another call that sent the station into a near panic. Our supervisor, usually the picture of calm, was on the phone, voice tight. A man on the line threatened to end everything, claimed he had a stash of guns. He spat out coordinates that placed him right on the fringe of our territory. I remember standing in the office, radio in hand, waiting to be dispatched, my mind already leaping to dreadful scenarios. Was I about to come across another scene as horrific as that burned-out husk? The cubicle farm chief tried to keep the man on the line, but he was raving about regret, about how he had nowhere else to go, that he wanted the desert to swallow him up. My coworker Parker and I exchanged glances. We both knew we were going out there. Protocol demanded it, no matter how unqualified we felt for a crisis involving a potentially armed individual. We piled into the same dusty truck I'd driven to the charred vehicle days earlier. The sun was glaring overhead, and everything in the desert looked bleached, barren. Parker fiddled with the radio, trying to get more updates, but the chatter was fragmented. We heard that another ranger outfit had arrived first, so we sped up, hoping they'd manage to talk the man down. A pit in my stomach warned me the outcome might be far from ideal. As we approached the coordinates, we spotted a couple of trucks from that other agency parked at a crooked angle. One of their rangers stood by, raising a hand in a universal signal that basically said, "Keep your distance." We eased off the gas and rolled to a stop. I could feel a wave of dread pulsing from the group in front of us. I hopped out, scanning the desert for any sign of movement. The other agency's ranger, a woman who looked like she'd barely slept, walked over. Her expression was a mask of grief, as though she'd lived through this nightmare before. She whispered that the man we were looking for had followed through with his threat but hadn't perished instantly. He'd shot himself, then staggered a ways, leaving behind a heartbreaking trail of blood until he finally collapsed. That knowledge hit me like a weight on my chest. While Parker stayed back with the truck, I inched forward to where the sand turned darker. Another ranger was kneeling there, shaking his head, radio in hand. I couldn't see the man's body directly. It was behind some rocks, but the hush from everyone present told me I didn't want to. It made me think of the new ranger standing off to the side, hugging her own arms. Word around the station was that she'd lost her husband, a fellow ranger, to the same fate not long ago. And here she was, face to face with another self-inflicted tragedy. The parallels must have cut her deeper than words could describe. Parker came up behind me, asked if we should offer help, do anything at all. The other outfit's lead ranger shook her head. She said they had it under control, though her tired eyes suggested otherwise. They told us to leave so we wouldn't be buried in endless paperwork. Officially, it was a matter for local law enforcement to finalize. We lingered, unsure of our place. Ultimately, we retreated back to our truck, guilt and sadness trailing behind us. Driving away felt surreal. The interior of the truck was baking from the sun, but I was shivering inside, grappling with the idea that these desert parks I once loved had turned into a stage for human despair. The further we got from that scene, the more the day's bright sky turned into a punishing glare, as if the desert itself was tired of witnessing such sorrow. Back at the station, the combination of the burned car and the terrible discovery weighed on the mood. It was as if the walls themselves had absorbed the grimness. I heard hushed conversations in the hall, people whispering about how the desert had always attracted wanderers, how some folks came here for a spiritual rebirth, while others sought an escape. Unable to take the tension, I decided to do something drastic. After my shift, I'd drive out to one of our closed parks for some midnight stargazing. I figured maybe solitude and a sky full of meteors could help me remember the desert's beauty, give me a reason to breathe easier. And for some odd reason, I packed my banjo. I'm no musician, but strumming a few off-key chords had a calming effect I needed. Under the cover of darkness, I navigated the winding roads leading to a park that had been closed to the public for the off-season. 30 miles of emptiness stretched behind me, not a single car light in sight. I pulled up to a rusted picnic table near the border of a dried-up wash, the overhead firmament ablaze with more stars than I'd seen in years. I climbed onto the table, banjo resting awkwardly in my lap. Each chord I played sounded tinny in the open space, and a breeze carried the notes away, scattering them across the desert. At first, I found a small measure of peace in that rhythm. Plunk, plunk, squeak, a laugh at my own poor skills. Then my imagination flared, images of charred rope, bullet holes, and that empty-eyed ranger discovering another unspeakable scene. Doubts crowded my head. This place suddenly felt like a proving ground for every dark possibility. I glanced at the horizon, wondering if a stranger with bad intentions lurked out there, hidden in the shadows. Memories of the haunted sight flickered through my mind. Why had I chosen to be alone yet again, where night could hide anything or anyone? A noise shattered my thoughts. Quick, muffled sounds in the brush, accompanied by what almost resembled whispers. My chest felt tight and I paused, banjo strings still vibrating from the last chord. Something or someone was moving in the darkness, not even trying to be subtle. My eyes struggled to focus, scanning the shrubs for a shape, human, animal, or worse. Those high-pitched murmurs drew nearer, punctuated by rustling leaves. I braced for some twisted confrontation. Maybe it was a group of drifters or local troublemakers who'd come upon me by chance. My pulse hammered, and every nerve wanted me to dash back to the truck. Suddenly, 3 coyotes burst from the undergrowth. They yipped and scampered like they owned the place, giving me barely a passing glance as they streaked by. My heart nearly jumped out of my throat in that moment, a bizarre mix of shock and relief. When their dark silhouettes merged with the distant night, I stood there blinking, banjo clutched in a trembling grip. I couldn't help chuckling at my own paranoia, but a heavier realization sank in. These desert creatures roamed confidently, oblivious to my presence and the nightmares people bring. They weren't weighed down by haunted campsites or heartbreak in the sand. This place was theirs, and I was just an interloper. I put the banjo away, the final notes of my attempt at stargazing fading into memory. Driving back, I kept hearing those coyotes in my head, their wild, carefree calls echoing across the dunes, a stark contrast to the human tragedies we'd witnessed. Looking at the vacant road ahead, illuminated by my weak headlights, the desert didn't seem lifeless anymore. It was alive in a raw, indifferent way, capable of hosting scenes of cruelty, sadness, and awe. But the fear clung to me nonetheless, reminding me that while the coyotes found freedom out here, I was the one haunted by what we'd seen. No matter how many shooting stars lit the sky, or how many chords I strummed, I couldn't outrun that uneasy feeling that more trouble could be lurking just beyond the next stretch of desert.
TaxAct knows filing taxes can be confusing, so we have live experts on hand who can help answer any questions you may have. Questions like, can I claim my SUV as my home office if I answer work emails in my car? If I adopted 12 dogs this year, can I list them as dependents? And am I doing this right, or am I doing this very, very wrong? Our experts have the answers to those questions and many others. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
I woke up earlier than I needed to, buzzing with anticipation for the day ahead. We piled into the car, my wife in the passenger seat and our dog happily perched in the back, her nose pressed against the window, as if she couldn't wait to hop onto the trail. Once we reached the parking area, the light was still gentle, filtering through the leaves in a way that made everything look bright and full of promise. I'd heard stories about this waterfall for years, how crowds flocked there to snap photos and wade in the pool below. Part of me preferred quieter places, but as we started walking, I couldn't help but enjoy the hum of other hikers. Kids running, couples laughing, the casual clank of water bottles in backpacks. It all felt safe, like some big outdoor gathering. The trail leading to the waterfall was wide and well-worn. Our dog led the way, ears pricked and tail wagging so hard I thought she might propel herself off the ground. Every so often she'd pause to sniff at a suspicious-looking rock or patch of moss. I couldn't help but laugh when she stared down a squirrel that chattered back at her from a branch. Once we reached the waterfall, the scene looked like something out of a nature documentary. Sunlight caught the spray, creating a faint rainbow right where the water thundered into the pool below. Families were splashing, ignoring the chill of the water, and the air was full of the sounds of excited voices. My wife suggested we take a quick break and dip our toes, but I was itching to explore farther. Something about heading beyond the popular spot seemed appealing. I wanted to find a slice of wilderness away from the noise. We started climbing a narrow path that snaked around the waterfall, leaving the others behind. It was a bit of a scramble, and we had to watch our footing on the damp stones. My wife joked about how each step took us further from cell phone reception. At one point, we paused on a ledge overlooking the falls. The people below looked so small, like tiny figures in an illustration. Their shouts and laughter reduced to muffled echoes that barely reached us. Up ahead, the trail dipped into a denser section of forest. The canopy overhead grew thicker, letting in only thin ribbons of sunlight that flickered on the ground. It got quieter, too. I remember noticing how the sound of the waterfall faded behind us, until the dominant noise was our dog's panting mixed with the crunch of our boots. I glanced at my wife. She was soaking in the scenery, looking a bit wary but still eager for the adventure. Something about that transition, from the cheerful chatter at the base of the waterfall to the stillness under looming branches, made me strangely vigilant. Not exactly scared, but definitely more aware of every twig and root. The air felt different too, cooler, maybe a little heavier. Our dog, oblivious to my sudden watchfulness, tugged forward, following invisible scents that seemed all-important to her canine nose. I tried to shake off any doubts, reminding myself that we'd hiked plenty of times before without incident. But as the path narrowed and more shadows draped over us, I couldn't deny a slight edge creeping into my mood. My wife tossed me a look that suggested she felt it too, though neither of us said it out loud. The plan was to enjoy a quiet trek, and for the most part, it still was. Trees rose high all around, the undergrowth damp from recent rain. We pressed on, coaxed by the thought of a secluded viewpoint, or maybe a hidden pool we could call our own. Yet every step took us further from the easy security of the crowd at the base. At some point, my wife asked if I heard any birds. That's when we both realized they'd either gone silent or we'd left them behind. The hush in the forest felt almost deliberate, like the entire place was holding on to secrets it didn't want to share. Even then, our dog seemed happy as ever, bounding along in her own world, full of curiosity. Neither of us had the heart to turn around with the day still wide open in front of us. Besides, a voice in my head insisted there was nothing to worry about. Eventually, we found ourselves on a slight incline, the trail twisting between thick trunks. We were well out of sight from anyone else. I paused to catch my breath, glancing back to confirm we hadn't lost our bearings. My wife set a hand on my shoulder, her expression somewhere between excitement and concern. Our dog barked once, somehow it echoed more than it should have. Then she continued sniffing around, tail wagging. I thought we were alone out there, free to discover parts of the forest few others bothered to see. Little did I know the sense of calm would vanish soon enough. If I'd guessed what was coming, I might have insisted we turn around then and there, though I doubt I could have convinced our dog to leave while she was still so curious and upbeat. We were stepping deeper into territory that felt untouched by the crowds. I should have understood that untouched doesn't always mean safe. I couldn't pinpoint the exact moment the forest shifted from peaceful to unnerving, but it happened fast. One minute, our dog was happily padding along the narrow trail, nose in the dirt, tail wagging. The next, she froze. Her leash jerked in my hand so abruptly that I nearly stumbled. I stopped short, scanning the trees for any sign of movement. My wife stood a few paces behind me, breathing heavily, and the only sound I caught was the rush of blood in my ears. The path ahead looked unremarkable, just more tangled roots and thick undergrowth. But our dog's body language was unmistakable. Her legs were locked stiff, and a quiet whine escaped her. She refused to move forward, pulling at the leash so forcefully that I worried she'd slip out of her collar. I whispered her name, coaxing her like I might a frightened child. She took a half step backward, eyes still locked on whatever lay up ahead. My wife came closer, her voice hushed. We exchanged a look that said, "This isn't just a dog being stubborn. Something's not right." Time felt distorted. The silence carried a strange weight, pressing down on us as we tried to decide what to do next. I strained to pick up any sound, whether it was a twig snapping or underbrush rustling. Nothing. No sense of a bear rummaging, no telltale scuffle of smaller animals darting away. It was that total absence of noise that unhinged me. Our dog let out a trembling whine, and I realized she was actively tugging us back the way we'd come. She'd never acted like this before. Usually she's the one urging us onward, tail flapping like a banner of confidence. Something unseen had spooked her in a way I had no desire to challenge. My wife murmured we should head back, and I couldn't disagree, though a part of me wanted just one glimpse to confirm if there really was anything or anyone in that darkness. My curiosity didn't stand a chance against the look in my dog's eyes. She was petrified, and the longer we lingered, the more I felt a subtle panic building. We had no guarantee what might happen if we pressed on. The forest had somehow transformed into an alien place, one that felt predatory in its silence. I gave my wife a slight nod, and we both carefully turned around, doing our best not to make sudden movements. Our dog practically dragged us downhill, as though the path behind us was the only place she trusted. My pulse galloped faster than my legs could carry me, and I couldn't shake the creeping sense that we were being watched. Each step away felt like escaping some hidden threat we had no business confronting. Within a few minutes, we caught the faint roar of the waterfall again. Relief mingled with lingering dread as we recognized that familiar sound. A trickle of hikers was visible in the distance, a group of teenagers chatting loudly, a family toting beach towels. Normal life existed only a short distance from where we'd been. Meanwhile, I half expected to glance over my shoulder and see someone, or something, peering through the trees. When our dog finally relaxed enough to trot with her usual bounce, I let out a shaky breath. My wife and I exchanged only brief words, neither wanting to voice the heavy questions rattling in our minds. Were we simply paranoid, or had we been a few steps away from something far worse? As we made our way back to the packed parking area, the mood among the day hikers felt almost jarring. Laughter and idle chatter floated around, oblivious to the quiet horror we'd escaped. I tried to convince myself the forest beyond the waterfall was just an ordinary stretch of wilderness, but every time I looked at my dog, I remembered how intensely she'd tried to pull us out. On some level, I knew we'd never hike that section the same way again. The memories were now stamped with a kind of dread I couldn't quite shake, an echo of a close call with something I never even got the chance to see.
Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya guselkumab can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
I pulled off the dusty highway into Big Bend with a plan so ordinary, it almost felt naive in hindsight. Get a few scenic shots of Santa Elena Canyon, maybe find some wildlife tracks to photograph, and then settle in for the night. You'd think after all my years guiding in the outdoors, I'd have been prepared for every possibility. But as I eased my van into that rough parking lot near the canyon, the quiet pressed in on me like a heavy blanket of dry air. It was that specific hush that you sometimes get in the desert, the kind that makes you question your own breathing. Stepping out, I noticed the sign that read Trailhead, though the wooden plank looked like it had seen better days. In front of me, the canyon walls soared upward, dark silhouettes against the late afternoon sky. The sun hung low, casting oblong shadows that seemed to stretch and twist across the ground. A park ranger's SUV had passed me about an hour before, and the ranger mentioned something about unusual wildlife activity in the area. At the time, I brushed it off. Sometimes they like to keep visitors on their toes. Still, I felt unsettled. I took a swig from my water jug, trying to shake the tension humming in my thoughts. A few hundred meters from the van, the trail was nothing more than patches of rock and shrubs scattered in the dry soil, occasionally dotted with desert flowers that thrived in the unlikeliest conditions. This part of Big Bend was infamous for the Rio Grande's shifting flow, especially lately. I'd heard talk about drought and irrigation issues, so I wondered how wide the river would actually be. The moment I left sight of my van, it felt as though the land had its focus fixed on me. Every step I took seemed magnified. My boots scraped loose gravel with each move, creating a rasp that made me jumpy. More than once, I stopped and glanced over my shoulder, swearing I heard something behind me. Though nothing ever appeared, telling myself it was just nerves didn't calm the tightness in my chest. As I approached the canyon mouth, the grandeur of the rock walls made me forget my worries for just a second. The layered stone was ancient, implacable. Sunlight caught in the crags, illuminating specks of dust that floated in the air. I was here to capture that majesty for my presentation, but part of me just wanted to stand there, soaking in the bizarre mix of awe and foreboding. I was about to frame my first shot when a flicker of movement across the Rio Grande stopped me cold. At first, it looked like a large shape slithering across the ground, something lying on its side, pushing forward. My mind tried to fit it into any logical category, but nothing made sense. I shuffled a little closer to get a clearer line of sight. That's when I realized it was a mountain lion. Not just any mountain lion, This thing was enormous, easily bigger than any cat I'd witnessed in the wild before. Its fur was the dull tan of a white-tailed deer, which was probably why I mistook it at first glance. It crept low, moving with effortless grace, as if gravity barely had a hold on it. I felt my breath catch. I'd read stories about Big Ben's big cats, but reading is nothing like seeing one up close. The cat seemed locked onto something behind a scrubby tangle of brush, maybe a jackrabbit or a stray deer. Or it might have been stalking something else entirely. I couldn't see. For a moment, I was mesmerized by how smoothly it glided over the dirt, nearly silent, every muscle coiled in readiness. Then it turned its head and stared right at me. My insides twisted. I'd never quite understood the phrase predator's gaze until that instant. Its eyes were bright, reflecting the last rays of sunlight, and in them, I saw a trace of calculation, like it was deciding if I was worth the trouble. The river separated us, but the water was shallow. Shallow enough that crossing wouldn't have been too hard, especially if desperation or curiosity spurred it. I didn't know if I should look away or maintain eye contact. Some part of my brain warned that running might trigger a chase reflex, and I wasn't keen on testing that theory. So I just stood there, camera in hand, feeling the weight of primal panic settle in my stomach. My feet shifted automatically, stepping backward at a painstakingly slow pace. The cat's ears flicked, and it glanced toward whatever it had been stalking. Then its attention came back to me. In that second or two, I felt every nerve in my body tighten, bracing for the worst. Would it plunge into the river and come straight for me? My pulse hammered as I readied to bolt if it decided I looked easier to catch than its original target. But either the water was too wide, or I just didn't appear to be worth the risk. The cat's gaze lingered one more heartbeat, then it swiveled away. I could almost imagine it sighing in annoyance, like I was a distraction it didn't have time for. I seized the opportunity. With shaky hands, I inched back a few more steps, then turned and hurried along the path, glancing over my shoulder with every stride. I half expected to glimpse a tawny shape bounding up behind me. Instead, all I got was the monotonous hush of a desert evening. By the time I made it back to the van, my entire body buzzed from an adrenaline overload. The sun hung even lower, bleeding colors across the sky in brilliant oranges and reds. Stunning, if not for the dread still tightening my nerves. Leaning against the side of the van, I gulped down water, trying to steady myself. Part of me wanted to leave, right then and there. Yet the other part of me refused to bail on the reason I'd come all this way. This was Big Bend, after all. People came here for rugged, unpredictable experiences, but there was a difference between seeking adventure and tempting fate. Standing there in the gloaming, I felt the desert's gaze on me again. Maybe I imagined it, or maybe something out in the scrubland was actually watching. Either way, I realized I'd crossed a boundary. This wasn't a casual nature hike anymore. I threw my camera and gear into the back of the van, heart still thudding, and decided to push deeper into that uneasy realm of twisted canyons and lurking predators. Sometimes you have no choice but to face the wild, especially when you've already caught its attention. I left that makeshift trailhead quicker than I care to admit, the last of the sun dipping below the peaks behind me. All day, I'd been psyched to take pictures and soak in the desert grandeur. But after locking eyes with that massive cat, reality felt harsher. My heart was still thudding from the close call, and the temperature seemed to drop fast, like the park itself was telling me to get my act together. I headed down the main road, scanning for a campsite that had been mentioned by a ranger earlier. Supposedly, it wasn't more than a few miles away, just a dirt pull-off with a fire ring and a pit toilet. Typical Big Bend accommodations, really. While I drove, the horizon bled from orange to deep purple, and the entire desert faded into a dark tapestry where every rock and bush turned into ambiguous shapes that could be anything, or anyone. I kept glancing in the rearview mirror, half expecting to see that lion bounding after me, eyes reflecting in the headlights. When I finally spotted the campsite sign, it was practically pitch black. Only one other vehicle was around. A tiny sedan that looked about as out of place as a city car could be out here. Their tent was zipped up tight, no sign of movement. That left me alone with my thoughts. After parking, I cracked open the van door and stepped onto the rocky ground, flashlight in hand. The glow revealed a circle of scattered stones and a gnarly old mesquite tree. Every shift of the wind rustled the branches, making them scrape together in a sound that had me on edge. Between that and the day's adrenaline spike, I was feeling jumpy. I rummaged around the van for some stale Oreos and a water bottle, figuring a tiny bit of comfort food might calm my nerves. Didn't help much. My ears were primed for any unusual noise, and soon enough, I got one. A distant, rasping scream echoing across the desert. I nearly dropped my flashlight. It was that distinct caterwaul I'd read about, the kind cougars make when they call or fight, a noise somewhere between a screech and a howl. Hearing it in the dead of night, knowing a cat was close, made my stomach churn. I tried to tell myself that the cat was probably miles away, that the rocky terrain distorted sounds. Maybe it was hunting something far off, and I was safe behind the metal walls of my van. But I couldn't shrug off the memory of those golden eyes sizing me up just hours earlier. I found myself leaning against the van door, scanning the darkness for any flicker of movement, half convinced I'd spot that sinewy shape stalking around the campsite. It's funny how your body can be dead tired, but your mind refuses to rest. I'd been fighting a respiratory bug for days, so I finally relented and dug out a bottle of NyQuil. Normally, I avoid it like the plague, because it can make me hallucinate if I'm overtired. But that night, I just wanted to knock out and forget what I'd seen. I gulped a dose, chased it with lukewarm water, and crawled into my sleeping bag in the back of the van, hoping for oblivion. If there's one thing I know for sure, it's that NyQuil dreams hit me like a freight train. Within minutes, my thoughts began swirling into bizarre shapes. Every swirl of the wind outside turned into a scuttling presence, creeping closer. In my half-lucid state, I imagined claws scraping against the van's exterior, the big cat's breathing just inches away. I could almost feel its gaze tracking me through the thin metal. My mind painted vivid images of a massive paw pounding on the window, a flash of teeth in the moonlight. It was so detailed I practically smelled the cat's breath on the night air. I must have dozed off, though, because the next thing I remember is jolting awake at what I guessed was around 3 in the morning. My throat burned, and for a second, I wasn't sure where I was. I lurched upright, my mind still tangled in the dream. Headlights? No, it was the moon casting weird shapes on the horizon, making the jagged mountain peaks look like crouching beasts. I must have thought it was the lion, because all of a sudden I realized I was shouting. Loud, incoherent cries that carried through the silent campsite. A flashlight flickered from the other tent, a beam slicing the darkness. The occupant probably wondered if I was being attacked. My own chest felt tight, like I'd been sprinting. I fumbled for the van's door handle, but paused when I realized I might accidentally let something inside. The confusion and mortification clashed in my head. Eventually, I managed to crack the door open just enough to peer out. No lion, no giant cat, just a gnarled landscape warped by moonlight. The wind toyed with me, whistling through the canyons, making a noise that sent another shiver through my nerves. Footsteps crunched outside. The other camper approached, calling out, "Are you okay over there?" as they shone a beam in my direction. I wanted to apologize, to say it was just the NyQuil messing with me, but the words came out in a jumble, something like, "I, cat, sorry, thought," until I finally managed a weak, "I'm fine." They hesitated, probably unsure whether to believe me, then asked if I needed water or help. I stammered a quick thanks but insisted I was good, and they retreated, though I could sense they weren't fully convinced. After that, my heart wouldn't slow. I tried lying back down, but every time my eyes closed, I pictured the massive cat again, those midnight screams echoing behind my ears. So I propped myself in the driver's seat, arms folded tight, headlights pointed out toward the open desert. I started the engine, just for the comfort of hearing it purr, and turned it off again, not wanting to waste fuel. The hours crawled. Every now and then I'd catch a flicker of movement in the distance. Could have been a fox, a coyote, or just my imagination. But my nerves sparked like live wires, braced for a pounce that never came. By the time dawn's pale light crept over the horizon, I was exhausted. The burning orange rays cast weird, elongated shadows across the campsite, and everything that had loomed so large in the dark now seemed small and harmless. Climbing out of the van, I did a quick sweep of the area, half expecting to find fresh paw prints circling the vehicle. I couldn't see any definitive tracks, but I did notice some indistinct impressions near a cluster of rocks. Could have been javelina, could have been nothing. Still, it left me uneasy. I packed up my gear in a hurry, the events of the night weighing heavily on me. The other camper waved, too polite to mention my half-coherent outburst. I tried to flash a friendly grin and ended up giving something that probably looked like a grimace. The terror of that cat encounter wasn't fading. It was like it had imprinted itself on my psyche, reminding me how quickly things can turn. As I revved the van's engine and pulled away, a wave of relief washed over me at the thought of leaving that haunted spot behind. Yet, the raw wonder of Big Ben still tugged at me. There were more photos I wanted, more vistas I needed for my presentation. But as the road unfurled ahead, I couldn't shake one echoing lesson. Out here, we're nothing but potential prey in a world ruled by creatures and forces we can't control. And that memory, the golden eyes peering across the river, appraising me under a setting sun, well, that's the kind of thing you don't forget. Not if you're lucky enough to survive it.
Support comes from ServiceNow. We're for people doing the creative work they actually want to do. That's why this ad was written and read by a real person, and not AI. You know what people don't want to do? Boring, busy work. Now with AI agents built into the ServiceNow platform, you can automate millions of repetitive tasks in every corner of your business, IT, HR, and more, so your people can focus on the work that they want to do. That's putting AI agents to work for people. It's your turn. Visit servicenow.com.
Your snacking routine can get a little dull. Time for an Oikos remix or Light and Fit remix. Like a crunchy storm of sea salt praline pretzels, dark chocolate, and butter toffee, showering down into a smooth, creamy yogurt. Enjoy 6 remix varieties, 3 Epic Complete Protein Oikos remix options, or 3 craveable Light and Fit remix options. See remixyogurt.com.
When a vehicle is certified by Volvo, it's much more than a certified pre-owned. It's certified for that road trip you've been meaning to take. Certified for your growing family. Certified for small steps and big leaps. No matter where the road ahead may take you this season, Volvo hopes you enjoy every moment and are confident in the certified by Volvo vehicle you've trusted to take you there. Contact your Volvo retailer today.
I drove out to the forest right around the end of September, figuring I'd snag one last peaceful weekend before the weather turned bitter. The spot I chose wasn't anywhere special on a map, just a little clearing I'd stumbled upon a year before. It was small, surrounded by tall trees whose leaves were just starting to shift to that deep red and golden hue. I remember thinking how gorgeous everything looked under that gentle autumn sunlight. It put me at ease in a way only the outdoors can. The first afternoon passed without a hitch. I pitched my tent, gathered some firewood, and listened to the distant calls of birds I couldn't name. The air felt cool but not cold, and my meal by the fire tasted like a million bucks. As dusk settled, nothing seemed strange. The usual nighttime forest soundtrack lulled me into a dreamless sleep, but the next morning, something seemed off. It wasn't anything I could pinpoint at first. I woke up to the sun peeking through branches, and for a moment, everything felt normal. Then I realized I was too jumpy. My eyes kept drifting from the coffee I was trying to make back into the tree line, like I was expecting to catch someone staring back. No reason to be spooked, yet every step I took felt heavier. After breakfast, I found myself wandering into the forest. I hadn't planned on a big hike, but there was this odd compulsion, like the trees were inviting me in. That's the best way I can describe it. I didn't consciously decide, time for a walk. My feet just sort of led the way. The further I went, the more I realized that this wasn't part of my usual exploring. I couldn't recall seeing the arrangement of trunks and undergrowth I was now passing through. Then I noticed something that rattled me more than any grunt of a wild animal ever could. A perfectly smooth, rectangular slab lying on the ground. It was glossy, reflecting the weak sunlight despite a carpet of leaves all around. I couldn't see a single scratch on it or even a patch of moss. When you've camped a lot, you know how quickly nature reclaims anything left unattended. So how is this thing so spotless? Instinct said I should go back, but curiosity got the better of me. I edged closer, trying not to snap any twigs underfoot. The slab reminded me of a grave marker that had fallen over, except there was no carving, no engraving, and it had no business being out here. This wasn't some well-trodden path. Nobody else was around for miles, at least nobody I'd seen. As I stood there, a weird heaviness took over my thoughts, like I'd wandered into a part of the forest that didn't want me. Even though my tent was maybe 30 feet behind me, I felt unanchored, like I'd lost my bearings in a matter of seconds. I forced myself to glance back, and there it was, my bright red tent, still in sight. So I wasn't lost, not literally, but every sense in my body told me I wasn't where I thought I was. Then it happened. A rush of air so cold I nearly lost my breath. The trees stayed completely still. Leaves on the ground didn't move an inch. Before I could process that, a thunderous crack exploded through the area. It was a single, deafening hit, echoing out in every direction. My ears rang, and when the echo faded, I looked up and realized it wasn't afternoon anymore. The sun was dipping low, casting long shadows across the forest floor. One moment it had been maybe 3 p.m, now it was late. Hours had blinked by and I had no clue how. The slab was gone. In its place was just a patch of leaf-strewn earth. That was enough to jolt me out of my trance. Every step back to camp felt like something or someone was closing in around me, but I couldn't see a thing. Once I reached my tent, I fumbled for my flashlight, even though there was still a hint of daylight left. Rationally, I knew trying to hike out of the forest right then was risky. Darkness was settling in too fast, and I was too frazzled to navigate unfamiliar terrain. So I told myself I'd hold out until morning, no matter how unsettling the night would be. And unsettling doesn't begin to describe it. I hurried back to my tent, telling myself I just needed to last until morning. I kept repeating that thought, trying to stay calm, but my nerves were fraying. The air outside was thick with silence. No gentle rustling, no distant bird calls. It was as though the forest had gone mute on purpose, like I had crossed a threshold into some place I was never meant to tread. Inside the tent, I flicked on my flashlight a bunch of times, making sure it still worked, because the last thing I wanted was to be left in total darkness if the batteries failed. Each flicker of that beam cast weird shadows against the tent fabric. Normally, the soft glow from inside your shelter feels comforting, but right then, it felt like a beacon advertising my location to whatever was lurking around. Time dragged. My watch read barely after sunset, but it might as well have been midnight. Eventually, I forced myself to lie down, thinking maybe I could at least rest my eyes and wait out the terror. That plan fell apart almost immediately. A strange, rumbling noise drifted in from somewhere beyond the thin walls of my tent. At first, I thought it was distant thunder, but then I realized it had a rolling quality, like someone exhaling in a low, gravelly hum. It reminded me, disturbingly, of snoring. I held my breath, straining to figure out if I was imagining it. Then it came again, slow and deep, punctuated by a faint rasp. It sounded close one moment, farther away the next. That unsettled me more than anything else, because I could picture whatever was making that noise circling around my campsite. I'd been on enough camping trips to know how animals move, usually accompanied by crunching leaves or snapping twigs. But this was different. There was no shuffle of paws, no breathy snort, just that slow, rhythmic rumble. Trying to calm my thoughts, I told myself maybe a bear was bedding down for the night. But the complete absence of any other sound set my teeth on edge. Animals rustle or snort or grunt as they settle. They don't just hover in the gloom making a solitary snore-like noise. And how could it possibly be floating around my camp like that? One second, it was to my left. The next, directly behind me. Though behind meant the thin nylon wall of my tent might be all that separated us. I was too terrified to unzip the door and look. I clutched my flashlight, but it felt useless. What was I going to do? Shine a beam in some enormous creature's face and hope it got scared. Every minute seemed to stretch, turning into an hour of me lying there, barely breathing, listening to that rasping sound shuffle around. Occasionally it paused completely, and a thick silence fell. Those pauses made my nerves spike, because I couldn't tell whether it was gone or just watching, waiting. Sleep was impossible. My eyes were gritty from exhaustion, but every time my lids drooped, the noise started up again, jerking me awake. I remember mentally begging the sky to start lightening up. Dawn felt like salvation that might never come. It was the worst waiting game of my life. Too paralyzed by dread to move, too on edge to sleep. Sometime near morning, maybe a half hour before actual sunrise, the snoring tapered off and vanished in a heartbeat. That sudden quiet felt somehow even more menacing. With the flashlight clutched in my hand, I listened for any hint of movement. A twig snap, a branch creak, anything. Nothing. It was like the forest was trying to pretend it hadn't just been invaded by something deeply unnatural. When the first beams of daylight finally filtered through, I wasted no time. My hands were trembling as I packed up, my ears hyper-attuned to every rustle in the brush. The entire forest was still unnervingly silent. It took me a fraction of the time it normally would to break down my campsite, stuff my gear any which way, and haul it on my back. That walkout was pure tension. Each step on the trail made me feel like I was trespassing in a domain that didn't welcome outsiders. The trees, which had seemed so beautiful when I arrived, now seemed to loom overhead like silent onlookers. Occasionally, I whipped my head around, convinced something was about to bolt from behind a trunk and block my way. Of course, nothing did, at least nothing I could see. By the time I reached the first signs of civilization, a beaten gravel road that led back to my parked vehicle, my shoulders were knotted up, and my mind was a scrambled mess of questions. I glanced back only once, half expecting to catch a glimpse of that polished slab again, or at least some hint of a shape slinking through the woods. But all I saw were the same autumn trees standing in eerie stillness. I didn't feel safe until I was behind the wheel, engine running, and speeding away from that area. Whatever had occurred out there had no explanation I could wrap my head around. One moment, time vanished like I'd been ripped out of reality. The next, I was stuck in a tense vigil, listening to something that shouldn't exist. I wish I could say my mind let it go after that, but the memory clung to me. Those vanished hours, the silent watchers among the trunks, that bizarre breathing in the darkness. It stayed with me well beyond the forest. Even at home, I'd jerk awake at night. Sure, I heard that low rumble echoing from some corner of the room. The rational side of me tried to brush it off as a weird nightmare or a trick of my senses. But deep down, I suspected I'd stumbled onto something in those woods, something that I was never meant to find. And it refused to leave me alone, even when I was hundreds of miles away.
Your data is like gold to hackers. They're selling your passwords, bank details, and private messages. McAfee helps stop them. Secure VPN keeps your online activity private. AI-powered text scam detector spots phishing attempts instantly. And with award-winning antivirus, you get top-tier hacker protection. Plus, you'll get up to $2 million in identity theft coverage, all for just $39.99 for your first year. Visit McAfee.com. Cancel anytime. Terms apply.
I remember piling into the beat-up car with three of my friends, excitement brimming just beneath the surface. We didn't have a particular plan, we rarely do, and that makes everything feel twice as daring. The road leading to the forest was a patchwork of crumbling asphalt and weeds poking through the cracks. My buddy Jeff kept cracking jokes about missing hikers and unexplained sightings, trying to set the tone. Nobody really laughed, but we pretended it was all in good fun. By the time we reached a spot where we felt like we could hide the car and not get towed, the sun was hovering low, painting the fields around us in muted gold. Corn stalks stood tall on either side of the narrow path, almost like a corridor inviting us in. We shouldered our packs and walked straight through them, my legs brushing against the rough leaves as my eyes darted from row to row, half expecting someone to jump out. Nothing did, of course. Just the occasional breeze, bending the stalks in unison. Eventually, the fields gave way to trees, and we started following a faint trail that snaked through undergrowth and fallen branches. My boots kept catching on twisted roots, but I pressed on. Being the one who suggested this trip, I didn't want anyone thinking I was spooked already. Behind me, Nicole was breathing heavily, swatting at bugs that kept buzzing near her ears. Every time she flinched, my grip on the shoulder straps of my pack tightened. I tried to shrug it off and chalk it up to nerves. After an hour or so, we found what passed for a clearing. Just a patch of ground less choked by shrubs. It felt secluded, perfect if you wanted to really get away from everything. We set down our gear. Jeff wasted no time fumbling with the tent poles, grumbling under his breath whenever a stake refused to go in. Meanwhile, I wandered around the perimeter, kicking aside dead leaves and peering into the distance where the tree trunks gathered more thickly. Even in daylight, the woods seemed to swallow up sound. No birdsong, no rustling branches, just a pressure in the air, as though the forest was ready to whisper something if you stopped to listen. Once the tent stood and the fire pit was built, we sat around watching as the day slipped away. That golden hour glow vanished quickly, and the temperature dipped. I tried focusing on the crackling of the small fire we'd managed, but there was a sense that something out there had taken notice of our intrusion. Jeff and Nicole joked about old campfire stories. Our friend Charlotte just kept scanning the tree line, lost in her own thoughts. I found myself wishing the night would either hurry up and pass, or reveal whatever was lurking in the shadows. When darkness settled, the air turned still. Every small noise felt close, yet impossible to pinpoint. There'd be a crunch in the leaves a few yards away, then silence. A twig snapped, and everyone's head turned in unison, straining to see something, anything, beyond that feeble circle of firelight. I tried calming my breathing, reminding myself that forests have wildlife. It's normal to hear animals scurrying about, but the noises felt timed, stalking around us in wide arcs. Hours later, my nerves were shredded. There was a flicker of movement behind Jeff, but when I focused my flashlight, nothing was there. That was the tipping point for all of us. Charlotte muttered something about heading back, no matter how late it was. Nobody argued. We put out the fire as quickly as possible, grabbed our packs, and left half of our things behind, figuring we'd come back when we had more light and maybe more courage. As we hurried away, our intended path melted into thick rows of corn, and we realized we'd taken a wrong turn. The walls of tall stalks scraped against our arms and faces, turning us around until we couldn't tell which direction was which. The ground felt soft beneath our boots, damp and full of fallen husks. We shouted to keep track of each other, more than to ward off anything else. Still, something kept pace with us, never closer than a few yards, like it was herding us toward the edge. My chest felt tight by the time we finally stumbled onto a rough gravel road. The corn rustled one last time, and then everything was quiet, almost politely letting us escape. None of us spoke as we marched to where the cars were parked. It felt bizarre how that looming threat vanished so abruptly. We crammed ourselves into the car, and Jeff started the engine with shaky hands. The headlights illuminated the mouth of the trail for a moment, showing nothing but rows of stalks, standing perfectly still as if nothing had happened. Nobody said a word the entire ride home. I kept replaying every flicker of light and every sound in my mind, trying to convince myself it was all wildlife, that nothing was truly wrong with the place. But deep down, I was convinced we'd attracted unwanted attention. And the worst part was knowing that, come morning, we'd have to go back for the gear we left behind. Sunlight changes everything. Or so I thought. The next morning, Jeff banged on my door at sunrise, determined to head back for the tents and gear we'd left behind. Neither of us could pretend the night before hadn't gotten to us, but we wanted to save face. So we rallied the others and climbed back into the car, acting like daytime would strip away whatever lurked out there. It felt almost serene when we arrived. The dew glistened on tall grass. Birds chirped like they had no idea how unnerving things had been hours ago. We took the same rough path into the woods, stepping over broken twigs and scuffed patches of dirt we recognized from last night's frantic escape. The place felt strangely smaller, tamer. My shoulders relaxed a notch, like maybe our imaginations had run wild. Jeff started joking, tapping a tree trunk with a grin. "Remember this one? Could have sworn it was moving in the dark." We all forced a laugh. Nicole was still a bit on edge, but at least it wasn't pitch black anymore. We moved along, teasing each other about bravery, as if the daylight really had chased off all the shadows. Then, out of nowhere, someone yelled, "Marco!" and laughter rippled through the group. It was just a spur-of-the-moment thing, like we were trying to tease each other's jitters away. We kept walking, waiting for a sign of anything out of place. And then we heard it, faint and distant, a voice cutting through the stillness. "Polo?" We froze. It didn't sound close, but there was an edge to it. Calm, but just beyond normal earshot. Nobody spoke at first, and then Jeff, with a nervous chuckle, hollered, "Marco!" again. The response came once more. "Polo." Something about it felt unsettling in the daylight, like we'd gone from being watchers to being watched. And yet, we couldn't resist investigating. Step by step, we followed that voice, weaving deeper into the woods than we'd gone before. Overhead, the canopy grew thicker, filtering the sun into ribbons of light. The deeper we went, the quieter everything else seemed. Even the birds stopped singing, as if they decided to keep their distance. We finally hit a rusted barbed wire fence, twisted and slumped, almost completely swallowed by vines. Beyond it lay the foundation of a building, just weathered stone and old boards. It looked as if whoever had built it vanished a lifetime ago, leaving the skeleton behind. In our hometown, we'd seen abandoned houses and barns, but this one had a distinctly unpleasant air. The ground was littered with broken glass and rotting beams. The fence posts had deep scars, as though an animal, or something with claws, had been scraping them. The voice went silent. We paused, scanning the area, half expecting to spot a figure ducking behind a wall. Nothing moved. The wrecked foundation stared back at us, daring us to step closer. My nerves prickled as we approached the gaping doorway that led to what had once been an interior. Chunks of wood and stone formed eerie shapes, casting shadows even under bright sunlight. Nicole called out, "Marco!" one last time. Silence. We advanced a bit farther, unsettled by what looked like dried, dark streaks on a couple of the fallen boards. Some part of me wanted to dismiss it as dirt or moss, but it glistened in places that made my stomach twist. The air smelled stale, maybe tinged with mildew or something worse. We spread out, trying to figure out where that voice could have come from. Nobody found footprints or fresh signs of a person living or hiding there, yet each of us felt cornered, as if eyes were tracking every movement. Jeff kicked at a broken beam and muttered about how messed up this was. Charlotte kept a close watch behind us, like she sensed a presence slipping between the trees. All our bravado from earlier evaporated. We decided we'd had enough exploring for one day. The tents were nowhere to be seen anyway. Either we'd gone off in the wrong direction, or they were deeper in the woods than we realized. And after seeing the ruin up close, none of us wanted to linger. As we made our retreat, the silence felt thicker than before. Every snapped twig behind us made me flinch. We were trying to keep calm, but it was like walking on glass, expecting something to lunge at us at any second. My heartbeat pounded in my ears, and I was glad we were still in a group. It took effort not to sprint for the car. When we finally got clear of the fence and saw the broader stretch of forest thinning out, relief washed through me. The sun felt warmer somehow. I could breathe again, but a quick glance over my shoulder caught a blur, maybe a figure or just the sway of foliage, hard to say. Either way, it was enough to make me hurry up. We reached the trailhead with a collective sigh, vowing not to come back. We had started this trip to prove we could handle anything the forest threw at us, but something else was there, something we couldn't pin down. Whatever had beckoned us with that polo, either lost interest or had moved on to some other game. Our tent might still be out there, but I felt safer leaving it behind. Sometimes it's better to just walk away, especially when you can't be sure what or who you're dealing with. We drove off, refusing to speak until we hit the main road. Our uneasy glances said everything. Daylight might have made the woods look friendlier at first, but it only peeled back a layer, revealing an even deeper, more unsettling truth. There's something about that place that plays by its own rules, and we were lucky enough to leave while we could.